You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the April 2022 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Grimes on the cover and is the style issue. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's the editor's letter from Radhika Jones, editor-in-chief, with photograph by Tina Barney. Is there any artist in the world right now quite like Grimes? Musically, she's operating on another plane. She was breaking ground in the metaverse before most of us had heard of it. As Devin Gordon observes in his cover profile, she refers to her work as post-internet because it's created in an era when virtually any sound from the past is available in a click. Her current project, appropriately for someone who has been a fan of Dune since she was four, is a space opera. Then there's her relationship with Elon Musk, known to the rest of Earth as its richest man, as well as one of its most stratospherically ambitious and idiosyncratic, but who, on Planet Grimes, plays more of a sidekick role as fellow futurist brainiac, Mars aspirant, and co-parent. More on that in Devin's revealing piece. The legendary photographer Stephen Klein, in his first collaboration with Vanity Fair, captures Grimes in her element. A mediated world where cinematic glamour coexists with sharp-edged machines. Her real name is Claire, and sometimes she goes by C, as in the speed of light, moving faster than the naked eye can see. Through Stephen's lens, lit up in stark neon, Grimes' charisma comes arrestingly into focus. She's joined in our spring-style issue by the stars of Formula One, whose fame has exploded beyond the race circuit to make them global celebrities. Nick Riley Bentham photographs them in fashion fit for kings of the road. In All That Breathe, its headline taken from a lyric of America, My Country Tis of Thee, Mae Jong writes about the day last March when a shooter killed 8 people in 3 Atlanta spas, 6 of them Asian women. Mae reports in heartbreaking detail on the lives of the victims, the choices and relationships and histories that propelled them to that fateful time and place. And she speaks with their families, the sons and husbands who picked up their phones that evening to learn that their mother, their wife, their beloved was dead. This is the story of a terrible crime, but it's also a story about immigration and the fact that even in our era of global connectivity, leaving one country for another can still trigger a profound and lasting experience of dislocation. The tragedy in Atlanta radiated far outward from its neighborhood. It was a shocking episode of violence in an America where anti-Asian hostility and crime has been on the rise, another insidious expression of deeply embedded racism. And the grief and loss of that day extended across the ocean, as Mae eloquently documents, to families whose daughters now will never come home. Thank you. Here are some of the contributors to the issue. Michael Darlington, Drivers Wanted. Darlington, a New York-based stylist and consultant, took a certain joy in celebrating the talent of Formula One drivers who work in a field far removed from the fashion industry. I have total admiration for their complete devotion to their sport and relished having a lighter moment with them all in my world. Patty Wilson, Planet Grimes. I don't think anyone has ever seen her in this light, so it feels incredibly exciting, says Wilson, the renowned stylist behind Grimes's out-of-this-world cover looks this month. The artistic vision, Wilson says, was a true collaboration between the musician, herself, and photographer Stephen Klein, all of whom created something a bit space age, a bit cyberpunk, and a bit outrageous. Devin Gordon, Planet Grimes. The hardest part of writing about Grimes, says Gordon, a Boston-based writer and former GQ editor, is keeping up with her. Her brain never shuts off. A conversation with her is like a 4-hour game of pinball. It's a sensory overload, but you keep on putting in more quarters because it's so much fun. Julian Sancton, In Search of Lost Time. Before reporting this article, I had no particular interest in watches. I didn't even own one, says Sancton, senior features editor at The Hollywood Reporter and the author of Madhouse at the End of the Earth. After his reporting, which included handling seven-figure timepieces in Monaco and Geneva, he found an appreciation for the passions that underlie the cutthroat market. Rachel Dodds, The Mildewed Age. Our political system has been fully captured by moneyed interest. The cavalry isn't coming, and for that reason, optics no longer matter, says Dodds, a New York-based culture writer and contributor to Vanity Fair. With a perspective rooted in economics, she paints a picture of the widening gulf between the wealthy and the rest of humanity and what it means for our current moment. Game on. From runways to hit dramas, Hoyeon doesn't miss. By Britt Hinemuth. And she's pictured here in clothing by Fendi, shoes by Givenchy. With one audition, Hoyeon's life changed. The fashion model from Seoul tried out for her very first TV role and nabbed it. Kang Se-bok in Squid Game, the dystopian, violent, record-breaking Netflix juggernaut that earned the 27-year-old a history-making leading actor prize at the SAG Awards. In a moment of stillness, on day two of her 10-day mandatory quarantine upon re-entry to South Korea, Hoyeon reflects on her whirlwind career pivot. The daughter of restaurant owners, they have a neighborhood soup joint. Hoyeon started to pursue modeling at 14 after a noticeable growth spurt. There was no background or interest in fashion, she laughs. I just wanted to earn money and travel the world. She recalls working with Karl Lagerfeld on a Chanel campaign. It was kind of amazing that someone like Karl, a leader, a hero, told me I could do this. On Squid Game, she didn't have much time to be nervous. You're just lucky to be cast. You don't want to F with that, so your only concern is doing your job. She was most surprised by the size of the show's crew. I have to act in front of over 100 people? And how supportive the more established actors were. We have a group chat. Shortly after Squid Game's debut, Hoyeon was everywhere, attending the Gotham Awards, presenting at the CFDA Awards, appearing on the cover of Vogue, politely dodging a queue of studio heads and power agents, circling her at the LACMA Art and Film Gala. I wasn't prepared. I said yes first, then was nervous later. I just did it. The minute Hoyeon learned she'd won the SAG Award for Female Actor in a Drama Series, beating out Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, Elizabeth Moss, and Sarah Snook, she thought one word, shit. She recovered, delivering an emotional speech before joining her heroes in the green room. Meryl Streep came to me and says, "Oh, I'm so happy to see you alive." That means that she watched Squid Game. What's next? Maybe we should lobby for my character to come back in season two, she jokes. In the meantime, she's reading scripts, parenting two rescue cats, and hoping one day to play the Little Mermaid.
Thank you.
The Music Man by Nate Freeman. In the photos, The Watcher 2021 by Kehinde Wiley and Jimmy Iovine. Interscope Records co-founder Jimmy Iovine has long championed new voices. His label's early acts included unproven future stars like Tupac and No Doubt. More recently, he set his sights on the contemporary art market, acquiring works by living legends including Mark Grutjan, and Bryce Marden. This year, Iovine is merging his interests. In January, along with Interscope CEO John Yannick and others, Iovine organized Lachman's Artist Inspired by Music, Interscope Reimagined, in which 46 artists riffed on album covers. Kehinde Wiley painted Dr. Dre, Jenna Gribben painted Lana Del Rey. And this fall, Iovine and Dr. Dre are establishing a magnet high school within the L.A. Unified School District, set to open in Limerick Park. Like their USC, Iovine and Young Academy, which the pair founded with a $70 million investment in 2013, the school will focus on arts, tech, and innovation. "These kids have superpowers," Iovine says. "We're starting in the inner cities and public schools. Laureen Powell Jobs is a partner of ours. Now the NFL. Pepsi, Verizon's a partner of ours. And we're going to scale this thing." liner notes. The return of statement eyeliner pays tribute to a music legend and shines a winking way forward by Laura Regensdorf. In the pictures, model Lucy Sanchez at Batsheva's Spring 2022 show and Ronnie Spector, circa 1964. Before we had a hit record, we had to make an impression with our style, Ronnie Spector recounts in Be My Baby, published by Henry Holt, her time capsule memoir with a new edition out next month. She signed off on revisions shortly before her death in January at 78. As newcomers in 1962, the Ronettes were seen as much as heard with their beehives and makeup. When we got on stage, the kids went wild, and the louder they applauded, the more eyeliner we'd put on the next time. That trademark makeup gesture, classicism edging, millimeter by millimeter toward transgression, is itself a song that plays on repeat. At Batsheva's Spring 2022 show, models wore exaggerated cat eyes, which evoked kitsch, echoed by the bouffant wigs, and metal, Ministry on the soundtrack. Dior's Mod Runway offered a subtle riff, thin parallel wings that recalled vintage ballet makeup. A judiciously heavy hand is also cause for fanfare, as Julia Fox proved after arriving nearly incognito to the Schiaparelli Couture show. The impulse to pile on liner feels right, part homage to the much-loved Spector, part identity shift, part pick-me-up. Backstage, designer Batsheva Hay explained how she likes to bring in darkness to offset the froofiness of the clothes. But that morning, as she sat down to get her own stark cat eye, Hay was all smiles. "You're going to make my day with this eye." Extra credit. "It definitely takes a certain character type to wear decals," says Donny Davy, the mastermind behind Euphoria's Obsessed Over Makeup. "But one need not be an art kid to relish instant transformation. Whether a rhinestone-dusted face at Fendi's Spring 2022 Couture Show or a spiked baby doll lash on Katy Perry for SNL. Pictured here, face lace flash brights, neon decals, semi-haze gym strips, Zara jewels, inked by Danny makeup, temporary tattoos, and Donny Davy and face lace spiked decals. Pro tip, seven talents share their signature liners for stage, screen, and life, from crisp flicks to pencil-thin mustaches. Avril Lavigne, emo icon with a new album, Love Sucks, wears MAC Eye Kohl in Smolder. "I use my fingertip to smudge it out. It looks even better the next morning." Michelle Lamy, Owens Corp co-founder with Rick Owens and executive manager of Art and Furniture, likes Kiko Milano deep black kajal. "I wear it as the nomads do in the desert." Juliette Lewis, actor on Yellow Jackets, recommends Charlotte Tilbury Ruck and Kohl pencil. "My character Natalie, she's a perpetual eyeliner wearer, always smoky, smudgy." Toba Arbach, artist with a survey at SF MoMA, wears 100% pure long-last liquid liner. "I've tried so many, and this is far and away my favorite. It's vegan and stays on better than all the ones with nasty chemicals." John Waters, director and Search Party guest star, draws his mustache with Maybelline Expert Wear. "My entire identity depends on this magic little wand of sleaze." Isamaya French, makeup artist with a debut EP out with Alto Arc, wears Sensei Designing Liquid Liner. "I love its perfect inky black color. I use it for an everyday bold cat eye or more graphic looks if the mood is edgier." Taylor Stanley, New York City Ballet principal dancer on stage this month, goes light with Mac I. Cole in Feline. "Lately, I have felt more drawn to simplicity, presenting as natural a face as I can. I do just enough to make my eyes pop." Now this from Daisy Shaw Ellis. A Stylish Marriage, with photograph by Geneva Adouam. There are plenty of adages lauding the little black dress. The versatility, the simplicity, the foundational qualities one provides to a wardrobe. And on. Miuccia Prada and Rafe Simons have applied all that and more to Prada shoes, a lace-up derby, and a slingback heel. Classic silhouettes bloom with possibilities, quite literally, with rubber flowers taking root in sleek leather. A stark spring awakening, but joyful all the same. The aptly named Daisy Shaw Ellis wrote this. And also from the same writer, Autobiography of Red, with photograph by Angèle Moraïs and Paul Mougeot from AMPM Studio. Haute couture is more than elaborate dressmaking. It comprises embroiderers, fabric specialists, and experts in all imaginable trimmings. Victoire de Castellane, Christian Dior's creative director of fine jewelry, took inspiration for her latest haute joaillerie collection from fashion's multidimensional world, and specifically from ribbons. Their intricate movements, and how, when intersected with delicate beadwork, the colors and materials interact. These ruby earrings, studded with diamonds, mimic that dance. The perfect partners when out painting the town. Space oddities embrace extraterrestrial whimsy and stay light years ahead of the curve in capes, specs, and sky-high stilettos that shimmer like the Milky Way. In the photos, celebrate 50 years of Ziggy Stardust in Bowie-worthy style. Moon Age Daydream, Stella McCartney top, Y Project jeans, Rodarte cape, Lancôme Renergie HCF triple serum, Off-White bag, Alina Abegg jewels, earrings, Van Cleef & Arpels clip, Prada bucket hat, Amy Paris jeans, Loewe top, a better feeling sunglasses, Brandon Maxwell skirt, Tom Ford bitter peach matte lip color and scarlet rouge, Bottega Veneta sandals, and Rainbow universal mushroom body salve. Heady Style, two monographs, Blend Fashion with Art and Literature, by Miles Pope. The V&A has collected menswear since its foundation, and across the museum, in paintings, sculpture, everywhere, we see imagery of men's fashion, says Rosalind McKeever, co-curator of Fashioning Masculinities, The Art of Menswear. The exhibition and its accompanying tome examine the evolution of power dressing through three themes. In Undressed, nude sculpture shows alongside 1980s Calvin Klein ads. Skirted silhouettes and florals make up overdressed, while redressed focuses on the suit. For the Fendi set from Bloomsbury to Borghese, Nicolai von Bismarck spent a year photographing Kim Jones's first couture collection for the brand. "I wanted to create images that felt as if they were from another time," he says, and so he used cameras from the interwar period, shooting on location from Monk's House to Rome. The book exudes a dreamy escapism and features ephemera, including letters between Virginia Woolf and her lover, Vita Sackville West. In the photos, quite suitable, Redressed from Fashioning Masculinities displays suiting from the early 19th century dandy Beau Brummel to work from contemporary designers like J.W. Anderson and Comme des Garçons, both vaunted deconstructors of the traditional. Here, Jean-Baptiste Belli, 2014, by Omar Victor Diop. The waves, as Tilda Swinton, Bloomsbury enthusiast and Fendi muse, writes in her foreword to the Fendi set, "For those among us dedicated to living a self-determined life, the beacon lit by the spirit of Bloomsbury flashes and glitters ahead, fresh as the day, more relevant and urgent than ever." First Person, New Memoirs, Plum Art, Love, and Politics, by Keziah Weir. Margot Jefferson, the Pulitzer Prize winner, returns with Constructing a Nervous System from Pantheon, a tour de force of personal narrative that engages with writers from Willa Cather to Catherine Mansfield. Josephine Baker, Gentlemen Dandies of Jazz and Cabaret, Ella Fitzgerald, and a wide range of other references and influences. Valerie Biden Owens, in Growing Up Biden, Out from Celadon, the president's strategist and younger sister describes Joe's trademark overenthusiasm as he introduces her to her future husband, supporting each other through devastating loss and their political campaigns, failed and victorious. Delia Ephron. When Delia Ephron wrote an op-ed after losing her husband and sister to cancer, a widower reached out. The two soon fell in love. Peter would be at Ephron's side when she received her own dire cancer diagnosis. Left on 10th from Little Brown chronicles their relationship and her fight for her life. Six Pack. Art World Thrills, A Lonely Vampire, and more new novels. Hammer. In Joe Mungo Reed's stylish character probe, an auction house specialist tangles with an art-collecting oligarch, plus his political hopes and wife, published by Simon & Schuster. Sea of Tranquility. Emily St. John Mandel's time-bending novel shifts from the long past to the far future. A novelist flees Earth amid a pandemic. A solitary drifter falls into a secretive government project, published by Knopf. Woman Eating. Claire Coda's gristly and thoughtful debut follows Lydia, an intern at an art collective, and a vampire, as she searches for human connection and a food source, published by Harper Via. The Candy House. In conversation with her Pulitzer Prize winning A Visit from the Goon Squad, Jennifer Egan's shape-shifting narrative swerves through Soured Love, Spy Manuals, and more, published by Scribner. Post-traumatic. Vivian, a legal advocate for patients at an NYC psychiatric hospital, contends with familial wounds and romantic trust in Chantal V. Johnson's Clear Eyed debut, published by Little Brown. Young Mungo, during an ominous weekend fishing trip, a tender love story unfurls between two 15-year-old boys, one Catholic, the other Protestant, and Douglas Stewart's anticipated sophomore novel, published by Grove. My Stuff, a Good Yarn. Menswear designer Emily Adams Bodie Audula, whose collections feature deadstock and vintage-inspired fabrics, loves items that stand the test of time. Stylephile, Bijou, apart from my late Aunt Mari's signature gold bangle, I wear Indian gold earrings and bangles, most of which I received during our Punjabi wedding ceremonies and haven't taken off since. Around my neck, I wear my Prunis hand-woven duo loop-in-loop chain, go-to shoe, Chanel slingbacks, daily uniform, Bodhi quilt trousers with an antique white blouse, and my black linen Bodhi safari jacket. On beauty, lather, Mexican tube rose soap by Bouli. Makeup essentials, classic chapstick and Chanel nail polish in Ballerina. Hairbrush, an Italian brown tortoiseshell-like brush with white bristles. Milanese pharmacies and grocery stores are the best-kept secret spots for a classic and timeless hairbrush. At home, furry friend, our dog, Monday. Aroma, Oud by Diptyque. Furniture, Green River Project, co-founded by her husband, Aaron Augula. Half Moon Stools with Bodhi Senior Cord Upholstery. Bedding, stacks of Edwardian crazy quilts over top white linen sheets with vintage Marimekko pillowcases. Flowers on the table, marigolds, tuberose, lilies, hydrangeas. Dishes, Villeroy and Bach fish plates from my childhood home. Glassware, Baccarat Nancy tumblers and my grandmother's juice glasses. Reading, Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. Letters to Eve by Pierre Berger. My Mother Laughs by Chantal Ackerman. I've Seen the Future and I'm Not Going by Peter McGough. Bresson on Bresson interviews, 1943 to 1983 by Robert Bresson. The menu, order out, spaghetti al limon, green beans, and black salt Caesar from supper restaurant in Manhattan's East Village. And that was My Stuff with menswear designer Emily Adams Bodhi Augula. This program is intended for a blind and print-impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.